Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world. And now your hosts, Yog and Manish.
Fighting bad marketing one podcast episode at a time. That's the topic of our episode today in the AVM Conversations podcast. This is me, your host, Manish Nepal.
And this is me, Yagneshwaran Ganesh.
And today we have a very special guest, Louis Granier, who is very well known for his podcast, Everybody Hates Marketers. And he is also a senior marketing manager at Hotjar. Louis, welcome to the show.
Bonjour, bonjour. Thanks so much.
Louis, before we get started, why don't you introduce yourself to the people listening to the show?
Sure. So, yeah, my name is Louis. I'm French. I've been living in Ireland for the last 10 years. I started my career in marketing after reading a book in French called Le Petit Traité de Manipulation à l'usage des hommes et gens, which is basically the French version of Persuasion by Robert Cialdini. And I think I read it when I was 18 or 19. And it really made me think a lot. I love the psychology of it and how to influence people, not in a bad way, but to, how to understand people so well that you can give them what they want when they want it. And since then, I had a dream about working in marketing. What's funny is that years ago, more than 10 years ago, I was actually jealous of those marketers working in marketing agencies, working in brand campaigns and whatever. And I thought it would be impossible for me to get there. But after trying a lot, I managed to work in marketing in startup. I had my own agency. As you mentioned, I work for a software company now. And then a few years ago, I also started a little side project where I just interviewed people I admired in the marketing space. And I had like 10 interviews recorded, and I published those interviews as a podcast. And it's been 3 years and a half now that I have the podcast called Everyone Hates Marketers, where every week I interview no bullshit marketers. And I think that's the intro and the shortest summary I can make out of my short career so far.
Right. No, that's great. I actually wanted to go a little bit deeper into that question more. Now, you are most well known for running this podcast called Everybody Hates Marketers, and which is a very weird thing for a marketer to say about their own vocation, own fraternity, right? So I know you have published this information publicly in your website, and you have talked about it in other podcasts, in other forums as well. But again, for people who might not be aware of it and who want to know about your journey, what ticked you off? Why did you decide to start a crusade against bad marketing? Can you tell us a little bit about the story behind this journey?
Sure. So I think it started when I was very young, and I didn't understand that until recently. I actually went to talk to a therapist 4 years ago. And we kind of went on in my childhood and why I was behaving certain ways. You know, like everyone has defense mechanism about stuff, right? The way we react to stuff is a way for us to defend ourselves against the world, in a sense. And my defense mechanism has always been to try to stand out, try to make people notice me by saying something or by finding holes into something or by trying to take, you know, a contrarian point of view just for the sake of it so that people would notice me, you know, especially as a young kid. And I think that was my way to get my attention from my teachers, from my parents. And this kind of personality followed me. Like, I never really changed. And when I started working in marketing, I always like to question, but why do we do things this way? And why don't we do, you know, it this other way? And at the start of it, I didn't really know what I was fighting for or against. I didn't really feel confident to have any beliefs. But over the years, when I started to talk about it to friends and colleagues and people outside, I realized that this was actually controversial to say that most marketing is bullshit. Like, most of the things that marketers do is actually not that good. And we try to trick people to reach our targets because, you know, everyone believes in good marketing until they need to reach their target, you know? So as a whole, I don't think it's that controversial to take a stand to say that, because everyone agrees in good marketing and believes in good marketing until they are under pressure to reach their target. And so the podcast is all about helping you to reach your target and to generate sales without being pushy, salesy, and feeling yucky at the end of the day. So I would like to tell you that this idea came up to me at 11 p.m. at night. You know, I discovered this brilliant idea, and the next day I put it live. But it actually took years of me trying to come up with statements and vision statements and whatever that no one really fucking cared about. You know, like, it took me a while to make people care about anything I was doing. To tell you a little way I was doing it in the past was I was trying to say the dark side of marketing versus the light side of marketing, for example, which didn't stick at all because no one really cared. So you see, it just, I wish I could tell you it was just an overnight success, overnight idea that was brilliant, but it wasn't it. And the second part of this is that I nearly didn't push publish. I remember that I nearly didn't publish those first 10 interviews because I was scared, right? I had butterflies in my stomach. I felt, oh, this is risky. Everyone hates marketers. This is kind of a strong name. People might insult me. People might completely not care. I was scared, but I pushed through. And I think this is one thing I'm going to fight for even more in the future. And if you're listening to this podcast right now, I want you to think about it. When was the last time you took a risk where you felt like butterfly in your stomach, especially in marketing? You need to do that to stand out nowadays. You know, there's so much competition. So I think that's kind of the story. It didn't come overnight, and it's part of my personality to try to be contrarian and to be very honest and transparent. I've always been this way. So it was never kind of an exercise, a marketing gimmick or something I was creating around myself, a persona. It just was always me, but I finally found a platform that fits my personality.
That's great, Louis. I think me and Yag can relate to a lot of what you said, because we ourselves like to see ourselves as contrarian marketers. And we're not saying this because we want to flatter the guests that we invite in our show. We are just genuinely thankful for you being so upfront and straightforward, because that's USP. I honestly think that what you said has helped you, cut through the noise that's so abundant in the marketing and business world. But here is a question, because you are such a upfront and straight up guy who believes in transparency. Except for throwing slang words casually in your episode or coming up with this Everybody Hates Marketing podcast and other things that you might be doing as a side gig or full-time job, how are you making a difference? What makes you so different from the other marketers that you are crusading against? How do you put a dent to the world?
I wouldn't say that I'm at the level where, like, of the people I admire, like Seth Godin and all of those people. I wouldn't say that I'm, making a massive impact, but I'm focusing on my people, you know, the people listening to the podcast and the small group of people who I know believe in the same thing. And to me, that's enough to start with, you know. I've been doing this podcast for 3.5 years, and I have never really had this delusion of grandeur where I was like hoping to get 1 million downloads, 10 million downloads and whatnot. So it happens pretty naturally. But you know, to change the culture, to change the world, you need to start small, right? And I'm being patient. I know it's going to take decades to actually make a change. But you know, instead of complaining about marketing and saying our marketers have it all wrong, which is not what I'm saying, by the way, I admire marketers in general, and I know it's a very, very tough profession. I don't blame you if you have to use shady marketing sometimes to reach your targets, because that's not your fault. But having said that, I think the way we do it is, instead of complaining about it without offering solution, I interview people who are good at what they do, and I make sure that they share their secret sauce. I make sure they share practical steps so that everyone listening can actually get value from it and apply that in their job, in their business right away. And I can't count the number of emails and messages I've got over the years of people who made an impact thanks to that, who changed job, who found a better job, who got confident again about their own marketing thanks to the podcast. So I'm, by any means, I'm not implying that I'm a crusader who has changed the world. Far from it. But I would say I'm humble enough to understand that I can't change the world if I can't influence 10 people, 100 people, or 1,000 people. And that's what I'm focusing on.
Right. That's amazing, Louis. In fact, I so much resonate when you said that you try to get the secret sauce from people, because there have been certain episodes where I've listened to and you keep saying that, you know, hey, I've still not got what I want. You know, give me one more example. Give me one more story. That's been really amazing. You know, that's so nice to hear. But there's one thing in common that I noticed, like, say, for example, about nine episodes back, approximately, I guess, Manish and I, we came up with this episode where we were talking about people following our passion projects, be it, you know, writing books or podcasts or creating this online courses, for whatever reason it is, right? So the reason I ask you this is because you have a full-time job at Hotjar, and then on the other side, you also run a podcast, you have a free email course, which is also taken off pretty well. So, you know, sometimes there is a reason why we do this, right? So what is your inner reason that you started doing all of this? And the second thing I wanted to ask along with that is, you know, when you have a full-time job and also do these things on the side, it becomes really tough to manage both, and how we give importance to both. And sometimes it also needs some sort of cooperation from the company side as well to allow you to accommodate those things.
Yeah. So the first question, I think it came from, it might sound a bit weird, but it came from some sort of energy coming from, like, me really wanted or feeling like this is something I should do. So what I didn't tell you is that I organized two events in Dublin years ago where I just was interviewing a CEO on stage in front of 45, 50 people. Just interviewing them about the way they run their business. I did that to promote my agency that I closed a while back. And I don't know why I did it. It was just to promote the agency. And at the end of the event, I actually got people who told me, I really like the way you interview people. And saying that, you know, it was new. They didn't really hear anyone interview people this way before. And to be honest, I'd never realized that I had a new way to interview people. I'm just literally trying to be myself, trying to dig into the subjects. And it made me think, shit, that's actually something I could be doing more of. And that's why I started to interview those 10 people. So based on the feedback I got originally, I kind of followed this energy that I had. And by energy, it means the things that I like to do that give, that ends me, leaves me more energetic at the end than at the start. For example, this conversation, I'm pretty sure that at the end, I'll feel more energized than I was at the start. And I like to try to be very aware of this, because those are the things I love doing and I want to do more of that. There's a great book about this called The Unique Ability, which is about this exact topic. It's not about the things that you're good at. It's about the things you are good at and that gives you energy, because then you can do that every day, all day. And you need to focus on that only. So that's kind of how I kind of channeled this and realizing, this is something that gives me a lot of energy. I need to find ways to do more of that, right? As for your second question about how do I deal with both working full-time 9-10 hours a day, plus that on top of it. Well, the secret recipe, the secret sauce is money. I simply invest the salary, a part of the salary I receive, back into this side project. So I have an audio editor who takes care of everything on the podcast side, so I don't have to worry about it. He's actually my brother. The second thing is that I have a virtual assistant who helps me with admin tasks and stuff like that. So I can sometimes, some weeks, I don't even have to do anything because everything is taken care of in the background. So, you know, that's the secret sauce. I'm buying time with money, and there's no other way around it. I've been pouring a lot of cash into this project over the years. I've been running it for 3.5 years. That's what it takes to not burn out and to be able to sustain both a full-time job and a side project like that. So, and as for the support of the company I work for, the reason why I actually work for this company is thanks to this podcast, because I interviewed their CEO and we got in touch after that. And they are pretty supportive about side projects. And so I think I answered all your questions.
Right. And in fact, I love the part where you said, you know, you tend to invest a lot more in the side gigs, because that's something that, again, we both, Manish and I, we kind of also resonate with, in the sense like sometimes we end up loving this part more than our main job itself. And it's so motivating because you're really learning. You know, there's, of course, you do things on the job and then there are solutions, there are problems for which you're working on. But then this experience of connecting with people, that's a whole different thing. But
absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about this story of Hotjar, how you connected with him and how it went on to become a job.
So David, the CEO of Hotjar, was one of the person I reached out first in the first 10 interviews, because I really admired the way he was super transparent about the business, and he used to write a lot of blog posts about the way they were doing things internally. So he kind of naturally was the first person, one of the first people I contacted. And then the other thing is, Hotjar was a software and is still a software that I used in my agency when I had my agency. So I was very much aware of the product. So I interviewed him, and at the end of the interview, he sent me an email saying, hey, we have a job open. Maybe you should apply to it. And so I did, and I got hired. And I closed my agency officially, because the timing was I had this agency for 2 years and I really struggled to run it. People didn't really find me credible, didn't trust me. I struggled to get clients. So I kind of burnt out, even though we had, like, at this stage, I think I had 3 people working with me. And the timing was just perfect. I started this podcast on the side as a way to get back into the game and to fight the burnout. And David offered me a job, in a sense, pretty much straight away after. So timing was right on this sense. But again, it's all thanks to the podcast and the fact that I reach out to those people. I passed through those butterflies in my stomach to actually do something that I never did before. And it paid off.
Nice. Before you move on to the next question, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors, which is Zest.is. Zest is on a mission to add value to the marketing community. For the people who are not aware of what Zest.is is, it's a marketing content stream that sits in your Google Chrome browser as a new tab extension. It's a content submission platform that curates high-quality articles, podcasts, infographics, videos, you name it, all marketing-related content. And Zest.is's AI-powered algorithm allows you to handpick your own personalized content feed that is specific to your unique taste.
And as marketers and content creators, Manish and I have used Zest.is at least 1,000 times, and we still keep using it to promote our content to like-minded marketing communities, as well as to find great marketing-related content pieces. And if you want to boost your quality content to an elite community of marketers, then just go ahead and sign up at zest.is/contentboost and let them know that you're coming from ABM Conversations podcast, and you're sure to get a $75 discount on your first boost. All right, so coming back to our conversation, Louis, one of the things that I've often seen on your, say, LinkedIn posts or your Twitter posts is, this. You talk about this unhealthy obsession that marketers tend to have with best practices, right? So, and sometimes the thing is, best of marketers also sometimes tend to fall into this trap. And on the other side, we have companies that totally go the other route. Like, say, for example, the other day I was listening to a podcast where Tim Sulo, the CMO of Hrefs, was talking about they don't have a big marketing team. They don't even have a product marketing team. All they have is 10 marketers, and 5 of them are actually writing content. So how do you look at when somebody talks to you about best practices?
What I've learned is that there is a massive difference between so-called best practices and first principles. And the difference is very, very important to make. Whenever you hear someone says, oh, you need to do this because this is kind of the SaaS playbook, or this is the marketing playbook, everyone is doing it, so we need to do it. Or looking at our competitors and looking at the way they shape their homepage, so we must do the same. You need to ask yourself, is it always going to be true? Is it based on things and principles that will never change, right? And in marketing, the first principle that will never change is that people never change. Yes, new technology arrives, but our brain, the way we're structured from the very, our very DNA has been, the result of evolution of like literally 4.5 billion years, from the very, very the very first life element that appeared on Earth up until now. So don't expect over the course of 0.00001% of the universe and our little technology change to happen for us, for our brain to change completely. So when you think about it this way, in terms of first principle, is it always going to be the same, those people? Then you can start thinking back from it. So you start thinking of first principle, the things that you know are always going to be true, and then you can build upon that. And Tim Sulo from Ahrefs is an example of that. He doesn't really listen to best practices, which are not necessarily true and will always be true. He thinks first in terms of first principles, even though he doesn't necessarily mention it this way, and think about what is the best way to generate and to reach our goal without, you know, following what other people do. And I think as a marketer, what made me evolve the most is when I understood that, and I understood that as long as you're confident in your ability as a marketer, as long as you don't have this major imposter syndrome coming and creeping through, focusing on first principles and just nailing that part, nailing the understanding people part, enables you to have breakthroughs after breakthroughs. And this is really different. So be very aware and cautious of people telling you, the more you reduce the number of fields in a form, the higher your conversion rate. And all of those case studies that are just based on one example, always question it and ask why, up until you get to the bottom of it. And then once you have the bottom of it, you can go up again. So first principles is where it's at. And this is why you need to be very, very cautious of best practices in general.
Right. And now let's also talk a little bit about content marketing, right? So every marketer in some way, they are either content marketers or they're working with content marketers. Now, let me pick your brains and ask you, like, what, according to you, is creating good content, or at least a content piece that doesn't fall into your definition of bad marketing? And, maybe in your personal experience, or maybe at Hotjar or some of the companies that you worked before or you consulted for, if you can give us some examples and say that, hey, this was really good content marketing.
So it's, again, I think it's all about understanding people, what they're looking for, what do they want, what do they need, what do they struggle with as the basis of everything. So whenever I struggle a bit to understand what should we do next, I like to think back of those people, the conversation I had with them, the interviews I had with them, the surveys I sent them, the trends I've looked at, you know, going back to that very root of marketing. Again, marketing is marketing. It's all about your market. It's not about you. It's about your market. So let me give you a recent example of something I've done. Hotjar has been wanted to do some sort of an event, like a virtual event, whatever you want to call the last few weeks. And we knew that everyone else wanted to do the same format. Every single company under the sun would do something very similar because of COVID, because of all of that. We know that most companies in the space would do something similar. So I reread a survey I had sent a few weeks back asking what has changed for you nowadays with COVID, like how do you work now? What's your biggest problem? What do you suffer from right now? And the vast majority of people told us that they have less time. They're in front of their screen all the time. And they're a bit bored as well. You know, it's like this weird thing where they're very busy, but they're also bored because they're in front of their screen all day from home, which is not something they were used to. So that made me think, okay, if we do something for them, if we produce something for them, it better be quick, good. It better give them something to look forward to every day. And I just looked at every single virtual event being done there. And what I like to do is I like to look at what's being done and try to pick it apart so that we can find something better that will go against the grain. And the example with virtual events is that almost everyone agrees that virtual events are usually like, could be 5, 6, 7 hours a day of content of people talking about themselves, promoting their stuff, not giving any insights. And basically you end up after watching an hour of webinar to end up with 5 minutes of actionable insights. And that actually was something I saw on LinkedIn. I did a search, virtual event, nightmare, or something like that, or problem or issues. I wanted to read firsthand what people didn't like about virtual event. And that was one of the posts I read. And it made me think straight away about a session that we run every 6 months when we have the chance to meet each other at Hotjar. Where we actually do lightning talks event, where it's instead of being an hour, everyone talks for an hour, it's actually 5 minutes, 5 slides maximum. And I remember I thought about it at night after thinking through the problem. I stopped thinking through the problem, but then my brain works on the side on its own. Everyone's brain works the same, by the way. Go through a problem, expose your brain to it, and then wait until your brain finds a solution. It could take hours, but sometimes, or days, but your brain will think through it most of the time. Anyway, and I realized, actually, what if we did something like that? What if instead of going after like 1 hour long webinars, virtual events that are boring, what if we ask our speaker to speak only for 5 minutes and they only have five slides? And what if we do that for 5 days and we do five talks a day, like doubling down on the 5 minute, five talks, five slides idea? And that's what we went for. And we created this content. We invited 25 people. And it wasn't difficult to get anyone in because people love the concept. And we got 13,000 attendees to this virtual event in a very, very crowded space in the space we are. And we managed to break through the noise by doing this. So you can see that in this example, the source of it was thinking that people were bored out of their mind and they didn't want to listen to a 1 hour long webinar. And by just finding one insight, we were able to double down on it, take some risk because it was risky, and made it successful.
Great, Louis. Louis, let me step back and piggyback on something that you and Yag earlier talked about. I mean, you have a list of charges against bad marketing in your website, and you talk about everywhere you appear and talk, right? So let me pick a little bit something from there and talk about the opposite, opposite thing at the end of the other spectrum. What are two or three worst marketing practices that you feel other marketers should stop doing? I mean, there are hundreds of them, I realize that, but what are your top two to three worst marketing practices that grinds your gears?
Sure. So again, I don't want to be seen as someone just criticizing everyone and feeling like I'm better than anyone else. Again, if you're listening to this, you're a marketer. I know your job is not easy. I know that, it's not easy to reach your targets, to do your job, to grow a business. But having said that, to answer your question, I think overall, I found marketers, especially in the start of their career, to be very selfish. So I think that's the biggest pet peeve overall is we expect to take from people without giving first, right? And that's a principle I like to think about, which is really about giving instead of taking. You can see that a lot from people starting their own business, and they launch their business and they expect everyone to care. They expect everyone to pay for their service without knowing them. They basically expect to take as much as they can from you without giving stuff first. And it might sound simple, but trust me, when you think about it, when you're stuck, when you don't know what to do next, when your campaigns don't work, usually the very source of it is because you didn't give enough in the first place. And if you switch your thinking in terms of what can we take first and instead think what can we give first, you know, that's when things start to happen. How can we help people? What can we do and what can we give them for free? What type of information can we give them for free? So that's, I would say, one of them. The other thing is this obsession with the shiny objects coming in, right? And the reason why everyone obsesses over those new features, the new tools appearing and whatever, is because marketers are incredibly good at marketing themselves, right? So they come up with new frameworks, new systems, they rename new things, they invent new features to make you feel like you're missing out on something. While, as we discussed a few minutes ago, it's not about the new stuff, it's about those first principles. Yes, you can obviously be better at your job if you add a new tool, but usually tools and tactics, they come and go. Your strategy, what you're going to do, what you're not going to do, how well you know your people, that will never change. And there is this obsession with the new, with the shiny, because it's sexy somehow. And I would challenge you to not think this way and not being overly obsessed over the new stuff, because timeless marketing principles, again, will never change. And these old frameworks that will stand true and have been true for a long time, like any copywriting principles from David Ogilvy, for example, anything like that, all of those books are still very relevant today. All the four P's of marketing, you know, price, place, product, promotion, all of those are very much still relevant today. So don't really believe those people who tell you that marketing is changing all the time. to be honest, it's bullshit. So that's the second one. And let me think of a third one. The third one will be a lot of marketers, especially digital marketers, working in front of their screen like me every day, looking at Google Analytics traffic, looking at Facebook ad conversions, looking at spreadsheets all day. They tend to see people as numbers, right? And I don't blame them. I mean, when you look at numbers every day, that's what you see. And they use terms like, you know, traffic and conversions and CPA and whatever else. And it kind of dehumanized those people that are actually generating those numbers. You know what I mean? So this obsession over numbers instead of people is also a source, I think, of misunderstanding, of a source of marketing ineffectiveness. And what I would advise here is to really get out of the building and genuinely talk to your customers as much as you can. Obviously, nowadays with what's going on, you can't really talk to them face to face yet, but we have the technology and we can talk to them on Zoom. We can talk to them over the phone, talk to them, understand what do they struggle with right now, understand how they found you, understand what they like about you, what they hate about you, what almost stopped them from buying from you, who influenced them, how would they describe you to a friend or colleague? I mean, all of those very, very foundational questions will bring you so much more value than looking at spreadsheets every single day. I guarantee it. Countless times I had insights and ideas for campaigns just coming from one conversation with one customer. And I've been like banging my head against the wall, looking at a spreadsheet for weeks without having any. This is truly a nice way to get energy back when you're a marketer and focus on what matters again. So the new versus the shiny new stuff, the people versus numbers, and I forgot the first one I mentioned, the giving versus taking.
Love it, Louis. In fact, absolutely also speak our mind. In fact, these are the kind of things that Manish and I keep speaking, we keep talking about over coffee. And also one of the timeless books that I would like to add to what you just said is The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. That's one of my all-time favorites. So that's always relevant. And so what I'm going to do today is that I'm going to try something new. In fact, we have not done this before with any other podcast guests. We are going to ask you some rapid-fire questions, maybe three or four questions. Mm-hmm. And you can give lengthy answers. You can give short answers. It's totally up to you. There's no particular format on that. So let me start right away. LinkedIn or Twitter, and why?
LinkedIn, because at the minute anyway, the organic reach of LinkedIn is insane. You don't have to pay to be seen.
Amazing. All right. So if you had to keep your job and if it was versus your podcast, which one would you choose for and why?
if money is not involved, my podcast.
All right. That's nice. All right. So is it about marketing strategies or actionable tactics and why?
Absolutely strategy, because strategy is about, that's not going to be a short answer, but a strategy, people use that word everywhere, but a strategy by the definition of the book, Good Strategy, Bad Strategy, that I would really advise you to read, is about three things. One, it's the picture of what's going on right now. Right? It's like, what are the challenges we're facing? What are we struggling with? It's like the very honest check on what's happening right now. Two, it's then a sort of a guiding policy. It's like an overall direction. This is where we're going to go, and therefore this is where we are not going to go. And the third part of a strategy is a set of coherent action, like an action plan that makes sense to solve the challenges and follow the direction that we've encountered. It's a bit like David versus Goliath, where David understood, looking at the picture of what was happening, step one, he saw that, yes, Goliath is massive, but there was a weakness. He's slow to move. There was something that could be done. Two, he decided the guiding policy. I'm going to slingshot something at him because, you know, I'm faster than him, and so therefore I'm going to do something about it. And three is literally the set of actions he did to overcome Goliath. And a strategy is very much that. Tactics come as part of the coherent actions you're going to do. But unless you have a clear direction based on customer insight, based on your brand, based on what you believe in, of where you're going to go, and more importantly, where you're not going to go, you don't have a strategy, And therefore, whatever tactics are just going to be meaningless because you're going to go all over the place.
This has been amazing, Louis. I think we are towards the end of our show. So before we sign off, do you have any parting message for the people listening to the show, Louis?
Well, it's going to sound weird, but I want to say I love you. Not in a very, you know, love affair type of way, but I just want to say I love you for paying attention to this. I know it's not easy to know what to focus on. I care about you. Thank you for doing whatever you're doing, whether it's, you know, in marketing, having your own business, wanting to launch your stuff. Believe in yourself. Believe in what you can achieve. Don't be afraid to take some risks. Life is short, so have fun with it. And, you know, again, marketing, go back to it, the principle. Marketing is about the market. It's about understanding them so well that you can give them what they want. And whenever you feel lost, think back about this very idea and you should feel better. And to both of you, thank you for taking the time to run this podcast. You've been super entertaining. Thanks so much for your question.
Where can people find you online? Where do you hang out?
Well, we've talked about it enough. I think Everyone Hates Marketers is where it's at. So you can just Google that and people will find ways to contact me.
Great, Louis. Thank you so much for coming to the show. I think we have a lot of notes to pull out from today's episode and we loved it.
Fabulous. Well, thanks so much for your time again.
All right. Thank you all. And that's that for today's show. And until we meet you next time, this is Bye from me, Yag.
And this is Bye from Manish.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.